to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Gail Seiler, your host for today. Thanks for tuning in. I don't think I even need to give you a weather report for this week. Everyone's been talking about the cold temperatures and even lower wind chills that we will have midweek. A polar vortex will be arriving, bringing with it brutal and dangerous temperatures. Today will be mostly cloudy with a high temperature of around 14, which is what it is now. The temperatures are going to fall throughout the day. And there'll be a northwest wind today of 23 miles per hour with gusts as high as 36. The temperature overnight will be minus 5 and the wind will continue. And then it will really start getting colder. Tuesday, the high will be 0 with a low overnight around 20 below 0. Then on Wednesday, it dips even further. The high on Wednesday will be around minus 10, and it will go down to minus 25 or lower overnight. And folks, those are the temperatures, not the wind chills. The wind chills may be 30 to 40 below zero on Wednesday and Thursday. And remember, those wind chills can cause frostbite on exposed skin very quickly. So cover up and be careful midweek when you are outdoors. On Friday, it will warm up a bit with a high near 10 above zero. And by next weekend, we will be back in the 30s. And if you're wondering, right now, the roads, at least in Ames, are very well plowed and getting around seems to be not much of a problem at all as I was driving in this morning. Later in the show, we will have an interview with Randy Richardson, who follows education bills in the Iowa legislature. We'll also have Crystal Davis from the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau to tell us about things going on in February in our area. But first, of course, it's Dennis Hart with the news.
Thanks very much, Gail. As always, it's good to be here on this Monday after a busy week of news events around Iowa. Of course, what affected everyone in the state last week, and as Gail has already said, promises to affect everyone this week, was the frigid weather. But there was other news last week, some of it, unfortunately, tragic. Yesterday, Sunday, the hunt for a missing 13-year-old Marshalltown boy ended when his body was found in a secluded area on the west side of the city. Authorities said no criminal activity was immediately suspected. Corey Brown had been missing since Tuesday night, when he left his parents' home after having a disciplinary discussion in which his phone was taken away. Also last week, a father and his 8-year-old son died, and his 2 young daughters were hospitalized after a vehicle they were in fell through the ice on Storm Lake in the northwest part of the state. Zachary Newland and his 8-year-old son were pronounced dead at a hospital. The daughters, ages 5 and 9, were airlifted to another hospital. One person who called 911 saw the vehicle fall through the ice. Authorities said they may never know what led the father to drive his vehicle onto that ice. There was also news last week involving Iowa Republican U.S. Senator Joni Ernst. Court filings were released showing that Senator Ernst said she was assaulted by her husband after she confronted him about his relationship with their daughter's babysitter. Those details were contained in divorce records involving Joni and Gail Ernst, whose divorce was finalized last month. Under Iowa law, divorce records are made public when divorces are finalized. Those records show Joni Ernst claimed she was the victim of verbal and mental abuse and of a physical assault. Those court records also show that she was interviewed by then-presidential candidate Donald Trump as his possible vice presidential running mate, and that she decided against running with Trump out of concern for her family. The day after all this became public, Senator Ernst spoke with Bloomberg News and revealed she had been sexually and physically abused by a man she had dated in college. She said she had called the Sexual Assault Counseling Center at Iowa State University, but never filed a police report because, she said, she was embarrassed and humiliated. In a related story, a national survey showed that nearly 1 in 10 women in the United States say they have been raped by an intimate partner. In Iowa, that crime is more prevalent. 1 out of 6 women in this state say they have been raped by an intimate partner. Also last week, Iowa Republican 4th Congressional District incumbent Steve King held his first town hall meeting of the year in the state following recent controversy over his comments involving white supremacy. More than 40 Iowans braved snowy weather on Saturday to attend the meeting in Primgar. The congressman told the crowd his comments were part of his defense of Western civilization. He answered numerous questions about border security and immigration and said there's a 70% chance Democrats will try to impeach President Trump. Meanwhile, last week, a third Republican announced he would run against Congressman King next year. King's latest challenger is Woodbury County Supervisor Jeremy Taylor, who served one term in the Iowa House from 2010 to 2012. Earlier, State Senator Randy Feenstra and Brett Richards announced they would also run against King. And last week, former Democratic congressional candidate J.D. Scholten announced that he will launch a nonprofit organization dedicated to raising awareness about the Earned Income Tax Credit, a move that he said would let him reassess whether to run for office again next year. Scholten lost his campaign last year against Congressman King. Also last week, a state judge ruled that Iowa's fetal heartbeat law, the most restrictive abortion limit in the nation, violates the Iowa Constitution and may not be enforced. That law was passed last spring, but it had been on hold during a legal challenge by Planned Parenthood of the Heartland and the American Civil Liberties Union of Iowa. The court decision is a major victory for backers of legal access to abortion, but anti-abortion advocates vowed to continue fighting over the issue, at least through the state's appellate courts. In another court case, an Iowa judge struck down part of a 2017 voter ID law dealing with absentee ballots. Opponents of the law responded, saying it will make it easier for voters to get ballots. Secretary of State Paul Pate said it would make it easier to cheat. The judge struck down the rule that had prevented county auditors from using an existing statewide database to look up missing voter information when they process absentee ballot requests. Also last week, former ABC TV news anchor and Iowa native Steve Bell died at the age of 83. You may remember him as the news anchor on Good Morning America back in the 1970s and 80s. And if you're of a certain age, you may also remember way back when Steve Bell was a reporter for WOI-TV in Ames. In Des Moines yesterday afternoon, one man died and a child was injured when a car drove off a concrete wall and crashed into a parking lot. It took place in the 2600 block of Ingersoll Avenue after a car heading westbound on Grand veered off the road and drove over a concrete wall. Meanwhile, an Ames man was killed last Tuesday in a head-on collision on an icy highway near Boone. The crash took place on Highway 17 when 65-year-old Miguel Garcia's vehicle crossed into the path of an oncoming vehicle. He died, and the female driver of the other vehicle suffered serious injuries. A strange story out of Council Bluffs last week when police said a dead body found in a closed supermarket may have been there for years. The discovery was made inside the old No Frills supermarket on West Broadway. The store closed about 3 years ago. Because the body had been there so long, it was difficult to tell the gender or age of the person. And a stolen truck slammed into Iowa's biggest homeless shelter last Tuesday night. It took place at the Central Iowa Shelter and Services in Des Moines. No one was injured. The red pickup had been reported stolen from a Quick Trip just 5 minutes earlier. 59-year-old Timothy Jones was accused of purposely crashing into the shelter. Authorities said he had been kicked out of the shelter just minutes before he stole the pickup and crashed it through the shelter's window. Meanwhile, last week, the hit-and-run death of a pedestrian whose body was found in a homeless camp in Des Moines was ruled a homicide. 21-year-old Dontarius Jamar Bomar was charged with first-degree murder. Authorities said the evidence showed that Bomar was operating the vehicle that struck and killed 69-year-old Charles Michael Childs. In another case, for the second time in 3 months, an Iowa man was convicted of carrying out an Iowa City murder. A Polk County jury found 42-year-old Curtis Cortez Jones guilty of killing a bail bondsman 2 years ago. Last November, Jones was found guilty of killing an Iowa City taxi driver. In Ames, police arrested an armed robbery suspect last Tuesday in connection with an incident at the Come and Go at 111 Duff Avenue. The suspect entered the store wearing dark clothing, a ski mask, and sunglasses. He allegedly pointed a gun at an employee, demanded money from the cash register, stole the employee's wallet, and left. 26-year-old Malcolm Canada of Ames was arrested on Main Street a short time later. Also last week, word that Des Moines officials will consider a nearly $5 million development agreement with the owner of Merle Hay Mall to reinvent the aging shopping center after the loss of the Sears and Yonkers anchor stores last year. Today, Monday, the council will vote on whether to double the annual tax increment financing payment from $400,000 to $800,000 for the next 12 years in order to help the owners attract new stores, restaurants, and entertainment venues. Meanwhile, word that a Sioux City manufacturing plant is closing and about 40 jobs will be eliminated. Prince Hydraulics employees were told that the Sioux City plant will shut down and the work will move to other locations. There was more last week, including word that the former business manager at Woodward Granger Community Schools, who improperly paid herself more than $200,000, received a suspended prison sentence. 35-year-old Melissa Lee Lance was sentenced to 10 years in prison, but that was suspended and she was placed on probation for 3 years in order to pay a $1,000 fine. She was also ordered to pay victim restitution and perform 250 hours of unpaid community service. Woodward Granger serves about 1,000 students in grades K through 12. It's about 20 miles northwest of Des Moines. Meanwhile, last week, a restored 16th century painting worth millions of dollars went on display at Hoyt Sherman Place in Des Moines. Public viewing for Apollo and Venus, a piece by celebrated Dutch artist Otto van Veen, began Thursday night. Hoyt Sherman Executive Director Robert Warren discovered the painting 3 years ago while searching for historic American flags in a storage room. The painting could be worth between $4 and $17 million, but the organization has no plans to sell it. In sports last week, Iowa State's men's basketball team played Monday night against the Kansas Jayhawks in Kansas, losing 80-76. Then the Cyclones went to Oxford, Mississippi, and defeated Ole Miss 87-73. The women's team lost at Baylor 84-69, but then defeated Oklahoma State 84-71. And the route was announced for this year's upcoming Rag Ride, the Register's annual Great Bicycle Ride across Iowa. This year's event will take place July 21st through the 27th. It will start in Council Bluffs and end in Keokuk. In between, riders will stop overnight in Atlantic, Winterset, Indianola, Centerville, Fairfield, and Burlington. The ride will cover 427 miles. A couple of more notes before we go, not sports-related, but in the category of unusual news. There was word last week that a former Central Iowa prosecutor who admitted stealing a subordinate's underwear had his law license suspended. 42-year-old Ben Stansberry, who worked in the Marshall County Attorney's Office, can apply for reinstatement in a year. And then there's Martha Stewart, that graceful living guru, who told about 900 farmers and landowners in Des Moines last Friday that she considers a cornfield to be beautiful. She was the keynote speaker at the 12th Annual People's Company Land Expo. Among other things, she told those in attendance that she does indeed get dirty, that she cleans out chicken coops, and she does a lot of composting. Many of her fans already knew that. And that, Gail, is our summary of the past week's news around the state. I'm Dennis Hart, trying to keep my hands clean and reminding you that I'll be right back here in this seat on Friday with a look at what's making news around Ames this week. In the meantime, please stay safe, stay warm, and have a great week.
This is my winter song to you. The storm is coming soon, it rolls in from the sea. My voice a beacon in the night, my words will be your light to carry you to me. It's love alive, it's love alive, it's love. Say that things just cannot grow beneath the winter snow, or so I have been told. They say we're buried far, just like a distant star I simply cannot hold. It's love alive, it's love alive, it's love.
That was Winter Song by Billy Martin. And thanks to Dennis for his statewide news update. A few weeks ago, we interviewed Jean-Paul Chaisson-Cardenas, who had been the Director of Youth Development for Iowa 4-H. He was dismissed from that position in August following months of turmoil over a proposed LGBTQ inclusivity policy. The policy, which had come from the National 4-H during the Obama administration, drew strong criticism from conservative groups and was pulled back last March. The Des Moines Register reported last fall that the decision to rescind it was traced back to officials in the Trump administration. In a recent development, just this past week, more than 70 members of Congress have signed a letter accusing the U.S. Department of Agriculture of, quote, inappropriate overreach for pushing the National 4-H Youth Organization to dump its LGBTQ policy. The letter, sent to Agricultural Secretary Sonny Perdue, requested that he explain his agency's role in getting the 4-H organization to remove the policy. The letter was signed by all three Democratic members of Iowa's congressional delegation. It calls the policy's removal, quote, inappropriate USDA overreach into 4-H inclusivity efforts. And it says it is detrimental to current and future LGBTQ participants. The letter goes on to say, disruptive actions like this send a clear and harmful message to the over 6 million 4-H members that LGBTQ youth are not welcome in their organization. The Register also reported that USDA officials did not respond to their requests for comment. KHOI contacted Representative Cindy Axne, who is among the three Iowa representatives who signed the letter. She was not available to speak on air, but provided the following statement, and I'm quoting, having participated in 4-H as a kid, I learned the values of community leadership and heart. Revoking guidance to welcome our LGBTQ community goes against all of these values. My experiences at 4-H helped shape the person I am today. I signed on to this letter to ensure that every child, no matter their gender or sexual orientation, feels safe and welcomed in this organization. That was a quote from Cindy Axne. We also contacted John Lawrence, who is Vice President for Extension and Outreach at ISU, and who was responsible for firing Jean-Paul Chaisson-Cardenas. He offered the following, quote, I'm not in a position to comment on USDA's response to the letter recently received from members of Congress. I can assure you that Iowa State University Extension and Outreach is committed to diversity and inclusion in all of our programs, including 4-H and youth development, as part of our land-grant mission to serve all Iowans, end quote. That was from John Lawrence, Vice President for Extension and Outreach at ISU. However, in a portion of the interview that we had not previously aired, Jean-Paul Chaisson-Cardenas questioned the commitment to and implementation of those values at ISU, particularly in 4-H and extension and outreach.
Iowa State University's policy all say that we need to be inclusive to all our clients. It's in the policy. Where we start getting into problems is in the procedure. How do you do that? I remember one of the statements that was made at the climate survey is that 50-some percent, if I remember correctly, of people who had filed a complaint and never saw it resolved. And so that's a really important issue in Iowa State, is how do we get a voice? And this is not only because this right now we're talking about LGBTQ youth, but the reality is I've seen the same kind of behavior with immigrant youth being told to to go back home, or, you know, kids chanting, build the wall, or kids dressing up, 4-H kids dressing up in KKK outfits and holding guns. You know, I've seen that kind of thing, and we've been had those reports. While LGBTQ youth right now in this particular situation were exposed, it's not the only group that was affected by this. And inclusion is for all. And so when we talk about it, aside from schools, it's impacting more youth in Iowa than anybody else. Shouldn't those youth have a safe environment? To go back to the principle, the core principle 4-H, shouldn't they feel like they belong? We were actually hearing from some leaders that if they had to take LGBTQ youth, that they would stop being part of 4-H. And one of the things that I said is, that's probably a good idea. We are a state program, and we are bound by state civil rights law. Mm-hmm. And so if you cannot work with all youth, then we need to, you know, allow people to step out of the program. Other people's discomfort with the civil rights of our youth, it's not enough to deny youth their civil rights or to make it difficult for them to access. And that's really important to me, is that you don't have civil rights unless you're able to access your civil rights, unless you have a vehicle to be able to say, I need my civil rights respected. And I was not seeing in the extension training, in the 4-H training, in the statements of policy, how that what's going to happen for youth. The university policy does a great job on campus, but extension is a different animal. And people were asking, okay, so if I get a kid who says, you know, who's going through transition and wants to use X or Y bathroom, how do I know which one? And if I let him go into this one, where is my cover, right? Where is my cover saying it's civil rights? And so I'm hearing from directors of counties and other staff asking me to please help him out with that, to help him thread that needle between allowing youth to have their civil rights and ameliorating the discomfort of others.
That was John Paul Chaisson Cardenas, the former statewide director of youth development for 4-H. We will be following up on the letter to the USDA and will let our listeners know what comes of it. This is Local Talk on KHOI. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Gail Seiler. The Iowa legislature has been in session for a few weeks now, and many bills have been introduced and are making their way through the Iowa House and Senate. Each year, there are many bills that impact education in the state. So I checked in with Randy Richardson, who follows education legislation on behalf of a group called Iowans for Public Education. Tell us a little bit about your background.
Sure. I was a teacher for 20 years. I taught in a small school district in southwest Iowa, and then left and went to work as an instructional technology consultant at an AEA in Council Bluffs. And then decided I've been really involved in the union all the time and had a chance to go to work as a UNISER director for the Omaha Education Association and was there for a short time and then came back to Iowa and worked for the Iowa State Education Association in their Des Moines office.
And now you post a legislative update for the group Iowans for Public Education. You do that pretty much every day during the legislative session. Is that right?
Right. We started about 3 years ago. Iowans for Public Education was started by a lady named Karen Nichols, along with Claire Selsey and myself. And they needed someone to do legislative updates, and because of my background, it seemed like I was the logical person to do that. So we update pretty much every day unless there's just no activity going on.
And all things related to education in
yes,
the legislature.
Yes, we try to keep
that's
it
your focus.
Limited to education, mostly K-12. Occasionally we'll do something with the regents or the community colleges as well.
Before we delve into the particular bills that I'd like to talk about, explain to us how you do that. How do you keep track of everything? I mean, I've been so impressed when I read your legislative update. I just think, how does he follow all of this?
I spend a lot of time online just reading the bills. The bills are all published daily as they're introduced, so I can just watch that. I've learned over the years, you know, to watch for the different committee meetings and know when committees are meeting. And then I have a variety of contacts around the state from my previous work, and they help keep me informed as well. And it takes, you know, 2 to 3 hours a day of just watching and reading and updating.
And there's been a rule change this year about committee hearings, is that right?
That's
and
right.
How has that impacted things?
Yeah, it used to be that when a subcommittee was going to meet to discuss a bill, they had to give 24 hours notice. That way people could come in and appear and testify. Republicans this year changed the rules on that, so they no longer have to give the 24-hour notification. They have been saying, Republican leaders have been saying that they will continue to voluntarily do this, but I haven't found that to be the case so far. It was easy for them to change as the majority party, and a lot of people wouldn't even notice it because they don't follow it that closely.
So let's talk about some bills now. What would you say are some of the most important bills that have come up so far, the ones that people maybe should be aware of, people who are concerned about education?
Okay. Probably everyone right now is they're focused on probably two bills, one that actually hasn't come up yet, and that's the bill that will eventually set the state supplemental aid. That's the amount of new money that goes to school districts. By law, that has to be set in the first 30 days of the session, so that'll be coming up pretty quickly. But so far, the bill hasn't been introduced. The other one that's going to get a lot of attention right now is Senate File 74. That deals primarily with the SAVE tax. That is a statewide sales tax that was introduced a few years ago. Part of that money is set aside for property tax relief, but a good chunk of it is also set aside for school infrastructure. And last year, the school districts the School Board Association, a lot of other groups were wanting that extended because schools need to be able to issue bonds before they can do any infrastructure, new school buildings, and it wasn't extended. So there's a big push this year to extend that so that schools can do their bonding and get their finance worked out. And there was a bill introduced by Dawson, who's a Republican, to do that. Unfortunately, there are some other things that are included in that bill, so I don't know if it'll be amended. I haven't seen a fiscal note for the bill yet, so I don't know what it's actually going to cost. A lot of times with bills that have new spending, the Legislative Services Agency will do a fiscal note that shows what the new costs are.
So funding to be determined. That's always a big issue, but right now those negotiations and decisions are just starting.
Right. Governor Reynolds came out and called for, I think, about $92 million in new funding for K-12 school districts. That's about a 2.3% increase, which is considerably less than a lot of the education groups were wanting. Now we have to see whether or not the Republican legislature will agree with that or if they'll come in somewhere lower.
Because last year the funding was down.
Yes. It's been down for several years.
Several years. So other topics that I saw in your legislative updates and I know, you know, kind of are in the news around schools are things like charter schools and vouchers, which may potentially detract funding from public schools. Is there anything related to that in the works?
There is. Brad Zahn, who's a Republican from the Urbandale area, introduced a bill. It's called Senate File 21, and it's setting aside an additional $7 million for something called a school tuition organization. The way that works, there's a pot of money. Currently, it is $13 million that is set aside for this. And then that money can be pulled out by people who want to send their kids to private schools or do things of that nature. And they're wanting to increase that set aside for that. So it's basically a tax credit. This is the way it works, is that a corporation or somebody can actually contribute to that fund. Somebody can pull it out and then use the money for private education. Obviously, public school advocates are opposed to that because that's $7 million that could go to our schools. Beyond that, I haven't seen much else that's out there. Frankly, the budget's going to be pretty tight, given the Medicaid problems that the state has and some of the other issues. I don't think there's going to be a lot of money for anything big this year.
And where is that bill currently?
That bill is,
How far has it gotten?
It was introduced in the Ways and Means Committee, and it's currently in subcommittee. I don't think there's been a vote scheduled on that in subcommittee or even the subcommittee meeting. I don't think it has been scheduled. It's important because if a bill goes into a Ways and Means Committee, it's not susceptible to the funnel. The funnel occurs after the eighth week of a session, and it has to go from one house, has to be approved by one house before the bill can stay alive, unless it's a Ways and Means bill. So it will stay alive for the entire session. So we have to watch that very carefully.
And another topic that we hear a lot about is teacher contract negotiations. Any action on that?
A lot of school districts have locked in multi-year contracts with teachers, so you don't have as many as you had in past years under the old law. I also know that from looking at some of the numbers recently, that out of the 330-odd school districts in the state, about 136 school districts have eliminated the traditional collective bargaining agreement. So a lot of teachers no longer are covered by those old contracts now. They're covered by handbooks, and those handbooks don't have the same weight that an old collective bargaining agreement would have.
That change happened in the last legislative session?
That would have happened in 2017.
So is there anything in the current legislative session that would further restrict teachers' collective bargaining or anything like that?
I haven't seen anything. Okay. Oddly enough, there's actually a bill that was introduced by Bruce Hunter, who is a Democrat from Des Moines, that would make teachers public safety employees. And under the new collective bargaining law, public safety employees are still allowed to bargain and have full rights of contracts. So that's still out there. The other thing that's going on is that both the AFSCME union and ISEA delivered oral arguments before the Supreme Court. They have sued to block the collective bargaining bill. And the Supreme Court will be issuing a ruling on that, not this month, but maybe next month even. So that could have an impact.
And another topic that I wondered about was guns in schools and all the different permutations of how that might play out, whether it's arming teachers, as they say, or whether people will be allowed to go onto school property with guns if they're legally licensed. Any things coming up around that?
Yes. In fact, there's a couple of bills, I guess, that would be have introduced dealing with people bringing guns on campus. One deals only with people who are public safety people being able to come on campus. There's another one that was introduced, I believe it was by Brad Zahn. Currently, schools are gun-free zones, so bringing any gun on a campus or even to drop your child
even
off.
Even in the parking,
right,
they drop out.
Would be
area.
Illegal. This bill would actually allow people to carry on school ground as long as you're just dropping a student off.
Anything around teachers having guns?
There's nothing right now that's out there. Nothing has been proposed. I know teachers are universally opposed to it. The bill I was talking about previously, by the way, is Senate Study Bill 1017. A Senate study bill, anything that's a study bill, is designed basically to test the waters. A study bill doesn't necessarily mean it's going to go into effect. It's put out there just so they can kind of get an idea of, is there enough support for it? Usually those study bills, once that they have been put out there, if there's enough interest, they'll have the number changed. They'll be introduced under a different number, and they'll move forward. Oddly enough, this bill, Senate Study Bill 1017, has already been to committee, and the committee's already recommended passage of it. So it will now go to the full committee mm-hmm. and then back to the floor, and they'll vote on it. So it's one of the fastest moving bills currently in the Senate.
Do you have any sense of how school districts see that bill? Do they see it as a positive or a negative, or are there problems with it?
I think most school districts are opposed to it. You may see a few rural districts where they'll think that's okay, but I just don't think there's going to be the support for it. There has been a bill that's been introduced that would make it illegal for an insurance company or for an individual who's acting on behalf of an insurance company to have discriminatory pricing on insurance rates for school districts that allowed guns on campus. In several other states, where they've passed rules like this, where they've allowed teachers to carry or where they've allowed guns on campus, insurance premiums have been sky high. Or else insurance companies have said, we're just not going to write a liability policy because the risk is too high. This bill would make it illegal for insurance companies to price their premiums at a higher rate for covering school districts. Now, I'm not sure that that's legal, and I'm guessing there would be a legal challenge to that, but that has been proposed. It isn't moving right now.
I saw some what I thought were bizarre things in your legislative updates. So are some things just introduced really for show and not really with an intent that they will go anywhere? Because some things seem so strange.
Yeah, there's Brad Zahn introduces basically the same bills every year. He's introduced a bill year after year, taking tenure away from professors at the Regents Universities. Yeah. He's offered a bill again this year that would get rid of the Department of Education. Mm-hmm. So that is out there. They're not going to move. There's not a lot of support for those. Sandy Salmon has been back in the news again. She always is introducing bills over in the House. She's introduced a bill that would eliminate – currently, if a person is in college and they want to become a teacher, they'll take the classes and then they have to take a standardized test and they have to score at a certain level before they can graduate
right,
and teach.
The praxis exam.
Right, the praxis exam. Sandy's bill wants to remove that minimum score. So basically, you have to take the exam still, but you can score zero, and that would still allow you to be licensed to teach. That was introduced last year. It didn't really go anywhere. It doesn't seem to make a lot of sense, but it's back again this year. There has been a push for years by some conservative Republicans that anyone should be allowed in a classroom, mm-hmm. that really you don't need special skills to teach. And so I think this is part of that movement to just say, we're going to deprofessionalize the education profession.
I saw some related to standards, one that would prohibit the state board from adopting the next generation science standards, another that would eliminate the Iowa Common Core. Is anything going to happen with those, do you think?
You never know. It's possible. I know Skylar Wheeler in the House has introduced a bill, House File 61, which makes the core curriculum and the content standards voluntary, but it still requires the State Board of Education to develop those standards. They're just not mandatory anymore. Mm-hmm. And it also deals with the science standards that you mentioned. among the more conservative members of the Iowa legislature, there is a lot of support for doing away with those. And you're going to see even in some school districts where you're going to have some teachers who would say, we'd like to get rid of those. So I really don't know where that's going to go. It depends how much of a priority that is for the leaders in both the House and the Senate. And so far, I haven't really heard them say that that's a high priority.
So it seems like there are particular senators or representatives who are introducing a lot of these bills related to education, particularly those that might be questionable in their impact on public education.
Salmon and Zahn have been. The Education Committee, the Senate Education Committee, has introduced a lot of bills too, and that's chaired by Amy Sinclair. And Amy has not really been a big supporter of public education as well. And they have a number of bills that have been introduced this year, and they're moving very quickly. She has a bill, Senate Study Bill 1029, that requires financial literacy classes for all. I know that's been a big issue in Ames because they've eliminated the family and consumer science position so that they can offer that. That bill was passed last year, but they found out that it was applying to people who were going to be graduating, and students were having to change class schedules to fit things in, and it caused a major disruption. This new bill would actually only apply to people who are going to be graduating in the future, so it wouldn't have quite as big of an impact on the schools. Another one that's interesting that I – some of these bills you look at and you think, I wonder if they have children of their own, and they're passing these bills for that. There is a Senate Study Bill 1033 that came from the Education Committee, and the bill extends the mileage that a student can drive on a minor's driver's license. So if you're under 16, between 14 and 16, you can get a minor's driver's license that allows you to drive to school or to school activities. You can drive there and straight home. They're extending that to 25 miles to 50 miles. So I'm guessing that's impacting rural students, and they want them to be able to drive further.
Anything else of note that you'd like to tell us about that's been introduced this year?
One thing that's interesting, I think it's out there, there is a movement to amend the Iowa Constitution. Senate Joint Resolution 1 was introduced on the first day of the session by Brad Zahn. And what it does is it would allow school districts to operate under something called home rule. Currently, school districts operate under something called Dillon's rule. This is a complicated topic, but basically, under Dillon's rules, local school districts can only make rules where the state gives them the specific ability to do so. Under home rule, the school district basically can do anything they want as long as the state doesn't say you can't do it. So it gives a lot more power to school districts. There hasn't been a big clamoring for that, but I noticed that once it was brought up and that got assigned to a subcommittee, and the subcommittee met yesterday. I haven't seen any minutes for that meeting, so I don't know what they've discussed or if they recommended to move it along. But I noticed that the School Board Association, the Rural Schools of Iowa, and the urban school districts have all come out in support of that, and their lobbyists are all supporting it. That tells me that that's on the fast track. Now, any joint resolution is used to introduce a bill to amend the Constitution. And in Iowa, to amend the Constitution, the bill has to pass the legislature in two different sessions.
Right.
And then it would need to go to a vote of the people. So there's a lot of opportunities. If Democrats came in and took one of the houses in the next election, they may stop it. It may not go any further. But it's a long process. But it's out there and it's moving along.
I'm always curious, who's writing the bills? If Iowa legislators are actually writing these, or, you know, we hear a lot about them coming from other outside organizations and the same bills being introduced in different states. Could you speak about that a bit?
Yeah, there's quite a bit of evidence that some of these bills are being introduced that were written originally by a group called the American Legislative Exchange Council, or better known as ALEC. Mm-hmm. And it is a libertarian right-wing think tank that wants to limit state government and limit all government. And they have written a lot of draft bills that have been introduced in Kansas and Iowa and Wisconsin and other places. In fact, the collective bargaining bill, the bill that passed to limit collective bargaining, was originally designed by ALEC. So I think there's a lot of that. I know a lot of these legislators, well, I can't say they don't have the ability to write those things. Based upon the details in that, I'm highly suspicious of where those bills come from. So I think ALEC is a major player in that. And there's another group called Americans for Prosperity, and they're at the Capitol all the time. And they're really just a subset of ALEC. They're funded by ALEC and operate under them.
Do you think there will be many bipartisan developments coming out of the legislature this year or not?
They talk that every year, but I don't see a lot of it happening. There have been a number of bills introduced by Democrats. And in the past, what's happened, those bills were assigned to a subcommittee that never met or that never took action, and they just sat. In fact, right now, the only bill that I could find that has been introduced by a Democrat that's an education bill that has even been assigned to subcommittee is House File 29. And that's the one that I mentioned earlier by Bruce Hunter about moving teachers to public safety employees. I'm surprised that it's been moved that quickly, but it may just sit in subcommittee too. It may not move beyond that.
Since teacher strikes have been in the news in L.A. in particular, is it correct that Iowa teachers are not allowed to strike?
Yeah, it's against the law for Iowa teachers to strike. There's always some discussion about that. Some, you know, the more radical local leaders talk about it and say, wish we could do this, but I don't see any widespread support for doing anything. Denver, Colorado teachers voted yesterday to go on strike, and Oakland, California teachers are now voting to go on strike. So there's going to be a lot more publicity around that, but Iowa teachers are pretty nice people, and they tend to want to follow the law. Right now, we've been on Facebook for over 3 years. We have a lot of members who talk to. About 40% of them are teachers. The remaining 60% are community members, retired teachers. We have kind of branch organizations that we work with in Burlington and the Cedar Rapids area, Iowa City. We have one in Southwest Iowa that we do some things with and one in Sioux City. We've been able to get leaders who work with us who are able to have local meetings and support us in those areas as well.
Well, I will say in reading your legislative updates that you do a very good job of putting it in understandable language, what the bill says, what its potential impacts might be, and where it is in terms of next hearings and discussions.
But that was part of my goal, was to put it in a little simpler language and not just copy and paste all the language into the post that we do.
That was Randy Richardson, who is part of the group called Iowans for Public Education, and you can check out their Facebook page. They have over 11,000 members, and you might want to start a branch here in Ames because we don't have one here yet. This is Local Talk on KHOI. I am your host, Gail Seiler. We've been joined in the studio by Crystal Davis from the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau, who trekked in from Nevada. It was a little treacherous.
In the beginning, it was a little bit like a whiteout, a little bit out in the country, but it got better as I got closer to Ames.
So tell us about some of the things that are going on in February.
Right. So February, we don't slow down, so don't let this cold and wind
get out there.
Slow you down. So there's lots going on. So we encourage you, one of the first things is once it does get a little bit warmer, there's something going on with Story County Conservation all through till March, actually. And this is called Beat the Blues Winter Marathon. And you can do this on your own time. And you can complete a full marathon, which is 26 miles. You can walk, run, ski, snowshoe, or bike. And you can do it on your own pace on some of their trails. And you just log into their website at Story County Conservation. And kind of a fun way to get yourself outside and enjoy the outdoors. Another thing, you know, the university's back in session. So sometimes that means more events and more things happening on campus. So Cyclone Cinema is back open. And so we encourage you to check out what they've got going on. This is free and open to the public Thursday through Sunday nights. They do two shows, 7 and 10 p.m. at 101 Carver, right on campus. And so coming up this weekend, they'll have Green Book is the movie they'll be showing. But we encourage you to also go to their website and check out all the great movies that they have coming up through the month of February.
I've been to that. It's a
great opportunity. Right. So, and always we invite you to check out what's going on at Wheatsfield Cooperative here in downtown Ames. Their first Friday cheese tasting will be coming up this Friday on February 1st, and you get to sample their wine or beer and their accompanying cheeses, and they've got great staff over there who can walk you through the process of pairing up wine and cheese or beer and cheese. So be sure to check that out. Some other things that are going on, if you like some great things happening at the Great Hall, they have ISU After Dark, which starts this Friday. And they've got two shows, one at 9 and one at 11. And they've got magician Nate Staniforth, and then they have an actress, Camelia Mendez, who will be on at 11 p.m. There's also hockey going on at the Ames ISU Ice Arena this weekend. The Ames might melt down. So if you like hockey and you want to check out this great facility that we have here in Ames, that'll be Saturday through Sunday, the 2nd through the 3rd.
And that's a minor league hockey tournament. Is that right?
That is
correct.
But
people can go and watch.
Mm-hmm. You can go and watch and cheer on your favorite ice hockey team.
Okay.
There is some great things happening at the library, always happening at the library, mm-hmm. but this Saturday they'll be celebrating Black History Month with some Saturday family fun events, and they'll have some special guest readers, and that starts at 10:30 in the morning this Saturday at the Ames Public Library. The Super Bowl is coming, but if you don't want to watch the football of Super Bowl Sunday, they are having a Super Bowl special at the municipal pool. So from 1 to 3 on Sunday, February 3rd, if you come to the pool wearing your favorite NFL team apparel, you can get in the pool for a reduced price, and it'll be super fun. Still celebrating football while swimming inside.
And the pool is at the high school.
And this will be at the high school, the municipal pool, yes, on Ames High Drive. Don't forget to check out Actors. They have their performance of Then There Were None. And this is Friday. It's what they're calling a killer season. They're going to have Christie's Darkest Tale of dramatic storytelling. So this is, they have shows this weekend and then the next weekend. So be sure to check that out at the Actors Studio out in West Ames.
And that's a play based on an Agatha Christie story.
Right. Mm-hmm. Always great performances there.
Yep.
Also, you can check out, there are two sessions for the Ames Plan 2040, their kickoff meeting. That's also at the Ames Public Library on February 5th. They'll have two sessions from 3 to 5 and 6 to 8. So we invite everyone to come and check out what will Ames look like in the year 2040 and kind of see what the city's got planning for you. And they will have public input and public participation, and they'll be talking about will there be new parks, new housing, okay. commercial area? Where will it be built?
Mm-hmm.
And so this is your opportunity to kind of share
Have
with them
voice.
What you're thinking and your ideas as well.
Important.
Very important. A great, interesting speaker coming up on Tuesday, February 5th, the Ames Connection to World War II's Manhattan Project. And this is going to be held on campus at Morrill Hall in room 2019. And the speaker is Kathy Speck, who is the daughter of a project researcher. And so a great opportunity for a lecture that starts at 4 p.m. Again, February 5th on campus at Morrill Hall. And kind of learn more about how Ames was involved in that project back in the day.
So history buffs will be there for that one.
Absolutely. We've got so much to talk about. We've got Art Zuccotti is having a heart paper workshop on Saturday, February 9th. So if you're thinking about something maybe for your Valentine, he's got a workshop going on where you can make your own glass that's in a heart shape to give to a special one. And that's from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturday, February 9th.
And he is a glass blower. So
he is
someone
a glass blower,
who's
very
really
talented.
An artist. Yeah.
Very much so.
But you can learn a little bit and
yes.
make something.
Very talented. And he works with you one-on-one to uh-huh. walk you through the process. So the annual Town and Gown musical is coming up on Saturday, February 9th at 7 p.m. They're going to be at St. John's Episcopal Church on Lincoln Way. And they've got chamber music and song. And they're going to have a buffet of sweets and savories after the musical. So be sure to check that out at 7 p.m. on February 9th. There's also a great lecture called Near to the Heart, Sunday, February 10th at 2 p.m. at the Farmhouse Museum, also on campus. And they're going to talk a little bit about the current farmhouse exhibition, which is called Timeless Love and Romance during the Victorian Era.
Oh, so connected to that Valentine's
yes,
Day theme.
So get you in the mood. Kind of learn about what happened in the Victorian Era and their dating culture. So we'll be seeing in. I'm sure it's a little bit different than what happens today.
And that building, the History and Farmhouse Museum, the actual building, I'd only been in it once, and it's very interesting. Just
that
structure, if you haven't visited it.
It's worth it. I'm with you. It's been a while, but it was lovely, and they have so much to share there.
Yeah,
so.
It really feels like you're walking back in time when you enter.
It's happy birthday to Grant Wood on Wednesday, February 13th, and the Parks Library is doing a special art walk to celebrate Grant Wood's birthday, and they'll examine the murals he designed as part of the PWPA program for Parks Library. And so It begins at 12 p.m. at Parks Library on Wednesday, February 13th. So.
And those are gorgeous. And there are probably people in Ames who've never visited the library and seen those murals, and they really are spectacular.
So another kind of hidden gem of great art that's located here in Ames. Also, on the actual Valentine's Day, you can go back to the Farmhouse Museum for a Victorian Valentine, and you can enjoy free chocolates, card crafts, and flowers. And that's from 4 to 6 on Valentine's Day at the Farmhouse Museum. Another interesting thing to do is we have the Carrie Chapman Cat Center here on campus. And on Friday, February 15th, they're doing a Ready to Run Iowa series that you can participate in. And we've got some great opportunities here where you can just learn. Maybe you don't want to run for office, but they will show you all the things you can get involved in, either behind the scenes or in front, if you're interested in becoming running for office. So.
We did a segment on that on Friday's Local Talk. And I think they said there's three Saturdays. So the first one is in February and then they're spread throughout the spring.
Right. That is correct. Coming up on February 16th and February 17th, we have the Home and Garden Show that's put on by the Ames Home Builders Association. That'll be at the Hanson Ag Student Learning Center on Mortensen Road. They'll have some great things, great local and regional vendors there. They'll have a food truck there, crafts for the kids. So if you're thinking about, what should I do with my house or my landscaping, or maybe I want to redecorate a room, all your experts will be there at the Home and Garden Show.
And it's not too early to think about spring.
That's
Cynthia,
right.
Our engineer, was saying seed catalogs are starting to arrive in her mailbox.
I know. So there's some good things going on at Stevens Auditorium in February. They've got a ton of things going on. They've got Cirque Mechanics that's coming on Monday, February 4th. That'll be at 7:30 p.m. They've got a children's show, Charlotte's Web. That'll be there February 5th. February 14th, on Valentine's Day, they'll have the King's Singers. And then on the 15th, they'll have the Fab Four, and then they'll have comedian Bill Ingvall on Saturday 16th. So they've just got something almost every day there at Stevens Auditorium. And they're also still celebrating their 50th anniversary of Stevens. So we encourage you to check out Iowa State Center and all the great shows they're bringing here. On the 18th of February, at Stevens Auditorium again, they will be having Harriet Tubman and the Underground Railroad. And so this is mostly centered for kids, they have a 10 o'clock show and a 12:30 p.m. show where they can learn about Harriet Tubman and her role in history.
So another good thing to do for Black History Month.
Absolutely. Lots of good things happening again at Ames Public Library. They have the famous history of the 13th Street Dam. This is presented by Christina Murphy. Wednesday, February 20th at 7 p.m. And they're going to talk about the research on the aquifer. They're going to talk about the drought of the late 1970s, the source water in the community. And so a great opportunity to learn about the history of the 13th Street Dam right here in Ames.
Which is I think it's going to be redone to make it more friendly to people kayaking and so on.
So,
and less dangerous.
You are correct. So what a great way to learn about the history leading up to all this.
Yeah.
So to get back to baking at Wheatsfield Cooperative, they will have another great session on February 21st at 6:30 p.m. where they'll be working on the basics of sourdough bread. I've had their bread there. It's fabulous. So they'll have a great session where you can learn and taste along the way.
I wonder if they give you some starter to take home with you. That would be nice.
That would be great. Yeah. February 23rd, the return of the DIY Downtown, which is do-it-yourself downtown events. So this will be all day on February 23rd, and downtown businesses will have do-it-yourself crafts that you can cook, craft, create, and have fun. And they'll have free parking in Main Street throughout the event as well. So good opportunity to get inside the store and maybe try something that they do or make try your hand at it.
So we're almost to the end of the month, but we have time for maybe one or two more.
Right. So just wanted to let you know there is late night, a late night event at Seven Oaks Recreation, Saturday, February 23rd. So if you like to ski or snowboard or snow tube in the dark, they have an event that starts at 8 p.m. and they will have a live DJ, a bonfire, and some complimentary pop and pizza to keep you going while you snow tube and ski
at night. And I assume they have lights.
Yes. And okay. They always have snow. So that'll be something fun to do. And then the ISU Theater is doing Sense and Sensibility on February 24th at the Fisher Theater. So they always have a great performances through the ISU Theater. So we invite you to check out the student-led performance as well.
So you are right. There's lots going on. So don't let this cold weather deter you. Everyone should get out there and do as many of these wonderful things as possible. I've got my list in my mind now. I'm ready.
Excellent.
Thanks, Crystal.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Crystal Davis from the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau, who comes in every month to keep us informed. This is KHOI Community Radio, and you've been listening to Local Talk. I've been your host, Gail Seiler. Local Talk is broadcast on KHOI at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to today's Local Talk show and all of our past shows online at our website, khoifm.org. Local Talk was engineered by Cynthia McClure. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music we heard was Winter Song by Billy Martin. Thanks to the other voices we heard on today's show, Dennis Hart with the news, John Paul Chason Cardenas, Randy Richardson, and Crystal Davis. Remember, your participation is what makes KHOI possible. We need you as an audience and a supporter. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. We encourage you to shop local this holiday season. You can support Ames' growth while enjoying a wide array of local shopping and dining experiences that Ames independent businesses have to offer. From the Ames Chamber of Commerce, happy holidays! Let's shop local and grow Ames.